Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, everybody, dear colleagues. It's my pleasure to welcome you to join one of our weekly neurology episodes. In fact, it's week four of the epilepsy episodes. My name is Bernhard Steinhoff. I'm the medical director of the Cork Epilepsy Center and currently serving as a co-chair of the EAN scientific panel epilepsy. And the topic of today is, of course, a very important topic. It's epilepsy in women. And it is a great pleasure to welcome as the expert of this podcast session here, Professor Marte Bjørk from Norway. Marte, would you just briefly introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Thank you. And thank you, Bernhard, so much for inviting me to talk about this really interesting topic. So I am a consultant neurologist from Haukeland University Hospital in Bergen in Norway. My primary task is working with people with epilepsy, women, and pregnancy in particular. Is one of my favorite topics. I'm also a professor at the University of Bergen and a chair of Bergen Epilepsy Research Group. And I'm on the management group of the epilepsy panel of the EAN.
Okay, thank you very much. So let's get into our topic. And first of all, I would ask you to give your comments on this complicated question of management of women of childbearing age with epilepsy, like the choice of the appropriate anti-seizure medication, contraception, folic acid supplementation, and so on. So the management of women of childbearing age.
Yes, that was a lot of questions. All
I know.
In one.
we can start with contraception.
Yes, yeah. So I think one of my my main points is that you need to treat most women with epilepsy of childbearing age as if they could get pregnant tomorrow, because it is a rather high likelihood that they would, because we know that more of these women have unplanned pregnancies than women without epilepsy. And also women without epilepsy already have a rather high rate of unplanned pregnancies. So you can't really rely on the fact that you will get to adjust the anti-seizure medication later, because you might not have that chance. The next time you see the woman, she can come back and say that now she's pregnant. One of the reasons for this might be that the anti-seizure medication is interacting with the contraception. But it's not the only reason that these women have more unplanned pregnancies, but it's one of the reasons that especially anti-seizure medication that has enzyme-inducing properties, such as carbamazepine, can or will reduce the estrogen and progesterone levels of contraception, making the birth control less effective. So you need to take the type of anti-seizure medication into account when you are choosing the contraception method. There can be a lot to remember, which medications are interacting with which medications. As you probably also know, the contraception can interact with the anti-seizure medication. So my best advice is actually to check with one of the databases of interactions whenever you find yourself in the position that you have to start contraception on a woman using anti-seizure medication, if you are not doing this every day, because it's a lot to remember. So both that the contraception can be less effective and the anti-seizure medication can be less effective because of the interactions. So that's contraception, yeah.
Yeah. So speaking about the best suitable anti-seizure medications for young females who are thinking about pregnancies, where we definitely do not want to advertise anything. But what would be, from the database we have right now, what would be the most favorable anti-seizure medications for those patients?
It's lamotrigine and levetiracetam. That's the simple answer. These are the anti-seizure medication with the best risk profile. Though I want to comment on your words there, because you said young females that are thinking about pregnancy. But my point really is that it's not only women that are thinking about pregnancy or wanting to get pregnant that you need to think about, but women that have child-giving potential that they can get pregnant. Then you should plan the anti-seizure medication. Of course, your first priority is to get the woman seizure-free. But then the second priority should be to use a type of anti-seizure medication that can be reasonably safe in pregnancy.
And one major point, I believe, is we talk a lot about teratogenicity of the anti-seizure medications, but also according to your very important recent publication, we should also speak about the risk of cognitive impairment and autism spectrum disorder risk of the kids, of female patients. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, there are different adverse effects that can result from prenatal exposure to anti-seizure medication. So obviously it's a congenital anomalies, as we know from many years back, that these medications are associated with congenital anomalies, though with different risk profiles for different types of drugs and for the different doses. But also, as has been shown the last decade, neurodevelopmental disorders are also associated with some types of anti-seizure medications. The type of anti-seizure medication with the highest risk for both congenital malformations and neurodevelopmental disorders are obviously valproate, which led to the ban of valproate for women with childbearing potential, unless other types of anti-seizure medication has proven use not effective or with too much side effects. Well, then you cannot use valproate for women that can get pregnant. But also topiramate, as has been shown both for congenital malformation and in our paper, which you were referring to, is associated both with a rather high risk of congenital anomalies and neurodevelopmental disorders, such as autism spectrum disorders and intellectual disability.
Do we have any information about combinations? Because sometimes patients are apparently on combinations of anti-seizure medications, and then it's difficult how to behave as a neurologist.
Yes, I totally agree. A very good question. There is very little information about combinations. What we have known for some years is that combination that contain valproate is associated with higher risk than combinations without valproate. And there's also some publications showing the same for topiramate, that the combination that contains topiramate has a higher risk of congenital malformations. What we recently shown in an epidemiological study was that there are also other combinations that are associated with higher risk, such as lamotrigine and valproate and levetiracetam and carbamazepine in combination, and as you know, combinations with topiramate. But the combination which was not associated with any neurodevelopmental disorders is levetiracetam and lamotrigine. So that is the good news. This combination seems we did not find any increased risk of neurodevelopmental disorders for this combination. That might be a possibility. At least this possibility should be investigated further for potential for use in women that does not get seizure free with just using one medication.
Okay, let's take a step further. Now our patient is pregnant. And let's say we did everything. We did folic acid treatment prior to the pregnancy. The patient is, let's say, on lamotrigine. How do we deal with the course of the pregnancy and the lamotrigine dosing?
Yes, very good question as well. So I think that it's really unfair. I think that the medication that is has less risk in pregnancy is also the medication that is hardest to adjust in pregnancy, because lamotrigine is really, it can be really troublesome to adjust the doses in pregnancy, because the concentrations just keep falling and keep falling and keep falling. So it can be the doses that you, to keep the concentration steady, you might need to double the dose, you might need to triple the dose. Sometimes I even had to use 5 times the dose to keep the concentration steady during pregnancy. And the problem is obviously that if you don't adjust the doses, then the woman risks having seizures during pregnancy, which can be harmful, obviously.
Do you adjust the doses of levetiracetam or Oxcarb as well, because the levels are going down?
Yes, I do. The levels, I think, in my opinion, in my experience, and also the data that we have, show that there are less, that the levels of levetiracetam and especially maybe oxcarbazepine is less influenced by the by pregnancy. But for some patients, they do sink and get reduced. So, well, my take on this is that we do measure serum concentrations rather frequently in pregnancy. I measure lamotrigine concentrations at least monthly, and often also the other medications, especially if you have measurements that show that they are sinking. I measure them a lot. And then I do not wait for the seizure before I adjust the doses. I adjust the doses if the concentration is falling below 30% of the pre-pregnancy concentration. So and I'm not waiting for the seizure, unless obviously the woman doesn't have seizures that are very severe. For example, if you have focal aware seizures that doesn't bother her that much, I would not be too stressed about the concentrations. But if there is a tonic-clonic seizures or seizure with impaired awareness that can affect her daily living, then I am really proactive in increasing the doses.
And how should neurologists behave after the birth?
Yeah.
Concerning, you know, so, breastfeeding, and how do we, yes, do we adjust the doses again immediately after the birth?
Yes. So that's also a good question, because obviously if you have been increasing the doses of these drugs during pregnancy, when the woman has given birth, then her metabolism will revert back to how it was before pregnancy. And then if you don't adjust the doses, then the serum concentrations will increase, which can be especially problematic and risky with lamotrigine, as lamotrigine will go into the breast milk, can be taken up by the baby in rather high concentrations, leading to sedation and apnea. So it can be really harmful for the baby. So the combination of lamotrigine levels going up because you have increased the doses a lot in pregnancy, and the fact that it goes into the breast milk are taking up at the baby, is a risky combination. But this has to be balanced with the increased risk of seizures after pregnancy, because there is the highest around the birth is the period where the woman is most prone to have seizures. And after, in the peripartum period, she will be sleep deprived and tired, and the risk of seizures is high, which can also be dangerous for her and the baby if she is having seizures, for example, on top of the baby, which can happen. This tapering of the doses need to be carefully planned and observed. We feel that it's important to make this plan before she has the delivery, and it's the woman brings the plan to the maternity ward, and I reduce the doses of lamotrigine over the first 2 to 3 weeks, because it takes some days before it's not an immediate process that the metabolism reverts back. It's gradual, especially for lamotrigine, because it's a liver metabolism that is the cause of the reduced levels in pregnancy. So it takes some time before this is going back to normal. And also they need a little more protection just after birth. So during the first 2 to 3 weeks, you need to get back to the dose that you used before pregnancy, or a little bit higher, maybe. I often go a little bit higher to protect her in this vulnerable period. Sometimes the woman also has gained some weight during pregnancy, and because of that, she might need a little higher dose. So that's my usual procedure.
Okay, concerning breastfeeding, because I always have trouble with the pediatricians after birth, and we have a lot of discussions going on even nowadays. Just a clear statement, I am right stating that breastfeeding is not contraindicated, yes. Right?
Yes, you are right, yes.
Okay, so that's a very important point, I believe.
Yes, it is. Though if there are medications that are new, that we don't know that well, it might be a good idea to check for updates on breastfeeding safety, because this data is constantly updated. You can find the newest data on LactMed. That's an international database, lactmed.org. So you can find this, because for the newest medication, we don't have that much information. But for the medications that we know, such as lamotrigine, levetiracetam, valproate, carbamazepine, for these medications, you are absolutely right that you can breastfeed. And it's recommended that you breastfeed. Though it's also, if the woman don't want to breastfeed, I feel that she should be not, well, that's also okay. It's a personal choice, obviously. For some women, it might be the best thing not to breastfeed if she's too stressed about it, or she needs to rest during the night. So it's up to her, but we can support her if she wants to breastfeed.
And I think we both want to encourage the audience always to contribute data to the registries we have, because if we do not have enough data, we cannot reply to the questions, of course. Perhaps one last point I want to cover during that session, very briefly but important. We were speaking about pregnancy and younger females. Can you just comment on elderly female patients who were on a sustained anti-seizure medication? What do we have to consider in those patients?
Yeah, you are thinking about bone health.
Yep.
I think, yeah.
Yes.
So,
exactly.
Yes. So enzyme-inducing drugs can impair bone health, making the bone density lower and increasing the risk of osteoporosis. So for these patients, you might consider changing the drug, or if she is already osteoporotic, or at least measure the bone density and encourage the use of calcium and D vitamin. When I encounter women in postmenopausal or perimenopausal period on carbamazepine, if they are stable and happy with the medication, I don't really want to change it. But I will refer them to bone density measurements and also encourage them to take some D vitamin supplements and maybe also calcium. Can I talk about folic acid just quickly?
Absolutely. Yeah, not quickly. We have still a couple of minutes, of course.
Okay, great. Yes. So I want to just encourage people to ensure that women with breastfeeding potential that are using anti-seizure medication, that they are considering use of low-dose folic acid, even if they're not planning pregnancy immediately, because of this high risk of unplanned pregnancy. Because we know that if you are starting too late with folic acid, then there is an association to impaired neurodevelopment in the child from several publications. So that's why the International League Against Epilepsy, in their last task force report, they encouraged the use of at least 0.4 milligrams folic acid to women that are of breast of a childbearing potential and are using anti-seizure medications. And then during just before pregnancy and when they are planning pregnancy and in pregnancy, there is also many that recommends to increase the dose. Yes.
And what increased dose would you recommend then?
So I tend to use between, there is no really good data on dose, on which dose to use. There are, so we don't have data that supports use of really high doses, such as 5 milligram, is beneficial, though that is the recommendation in several guidelines to use 5 milligrams or 4 milligrams. So we have recently published one report that shows an association between use of high dose folic acid and childhood cancer, which was recently published in JAMA Neurology. That is only one report, but it's tend to, at least it made me consider to tailor the dose to the person in question. So individualize the folic acid dose. I measure the folate before and during pregnancy, make sure that it's above 30. And then usually 1 milligram will be enough or 2 milligrams will be enough to reach that level. But some people require more due to genetic variation and the type of anti-seizure medication that they are using.
Yeah, that is a very important information, because in Germany right now, it's still a recommendation of 5 milligram in every case, but you have to differentiate a little bit on an individual basis, you said. Sure, great, wonderful. Thank you very much. I think it was very apparent how important that topic is. And if you have the chance to repeat our weekly neurology epilepsy episodes again, thanks to the EAN, women in epilepsy will definitely be a topic we have to update again and again and again. So, Marta, I thank you very, very much for your expert participation in this session. And I thank the audience and the audience to participate, the EAN, to make it happen. And so I may conclude this weekly neurology epilepsy episodes for today. And thank you very much. Stay healthy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.